Hi everyone, this is Catherine from the Media Education Lab, and you're listening to the Courageous Rhode Island Podcast, the show that finds common ground, builds media literacy skills, and encourages curiosity for the people of Rhode Island. In this episode, our host Renee Hobbs talks to Christina Pyres, who is an executive director of Generation Citizen, an organization working toward engaging students in their own communities. Today, you'll hear her talk about how educational practices help students develop citizenship competencies, the impact of project-based learning in civic action, and the challenges facing civic educators in today's landscape.
Welcome to a Courageous RI podcast. I'm here with Christina. I don't know how to pronounce your last name. I realize that.
Pyres.
Pyres. Christina is the executive director of Generation Citizen New England. And I met her at least a year ago now as I learned about the great work that Generation Citizen is doing in Massachusetts and in Rhode Island. Christina, thank you for being a member of our Courageous RI community. Can you tell us about Generation Citizen and what you do there?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for having me, Renee. It's a pleasure to be here. Happy to share about Generation Citizens. So we are a leading civics education nonprofit, and we're actually found originally here in Providence, Rhode Island, back in 2010. Our CEO and founder came out of Brown University, and he ran his first pilot of Generation Citizen in Central High School in Providence, which is really cool. But we've since expanded across the country. We now are in several sites like New York and Oklahoma and Texas, California. And we're focused on three main aspects of the work. And the first is, our mission really is to empower and equip young people to transform our democracy. And so the way that we're doing that is through a program model that directly works with schools and districts. So we have a student-led action civics curriculum. And this is a curriculum that districts are using in their classrooms alongside core content to really bring civic learning to life. It's a real-world application where students are thinking about issues of systemic inequity in their communities and going through the process of how to transform those issues through meaningful change by thinking about policy efforts and then taking action to try to actualize them. And the second thing that we do is we focus also on the policy side of the equation. And so we advocate very strongly for equitable civic education and policies that allow for that to happen. We do that both at the state and the national level. And then the last branch of our work is our youth programming work. And this really is a bridge between the two, where we're taking and supporting our young people out of the classroom to really engage as leaders and change makers in our policy work. And they are leading coalition spaces. They are advocating strongly for civic policies to exist at the district level or the state level, and really leading by example for what it means for young people to take charge in our democracy and really exercise their civic voices and their civic power.
It is a great program, and I really love how those three components fit so organically and perfectly well together. It is a leadership development program, but it's also fundamentally what democracy needs to be doing, which is preparing people to be engaged citizens. And that is only best acquired by learning through doing. And that's what your program is all about. Can you tell us about the new laws in Rhode Island that address the need for improving the quality of civic education in our state?
Yeah, well, we were so thrilled and applaud the Rhode Island Legislature for passing the Civics Literacy Act back in 2001. And this was a grassroots effort, a coalition called the Rhode Island Civic Learning Coalition, and many other organizations that have been sort of pushing this work forward for a long time, helped to pass that act. And what that act is requiring is that all middle and high school students, public school students, now have to demonstrate proficiency in civics education and they also are required to participate in at least one student-led civic project that allows them to make reason, think about their arguments, support their claims, really make connections between their local communities and state policies. And this was a huge step forward for Rhode Island. If you remember, there's the Cook v. McKee lawsuit, which, young people in the state were suing the state of Rhode Island for not providing them an adequate civics education. And so the legislator really responded to that. And they passed this piece of legislation that is really centering Rhode Island for what could be a very strong civic landscape. The other thing that's sort of happening there is that just this past February, the Department of Education just passed or put forth before the council a new set of history and social studies standards. And this is also simultaneously really supporting the landscape of civics education, because these standards are designed around four anchor standards is what they call them. And civics and government is one of those anchor standards. And that repeats every year, K through 12. And it really focuses on the depth of students' learning in these key areas over the breadth, which is very different from what the standards had originally set, which were massive and very hard to understand. And this is really centering students' learning on four key areas, with civics and government being one of them, which is incredible.
But I really, you've almost in a way helped us understand the sort of paradigm shift that we're in the middle of, right? Whereas before, well, certainly when I was going to school, social studies and civic education was a kind of massive content dump done via lecture, right? About you name it, everything. And then, of course, we never got even into the 20th century, right? Because there was so much content. Yeah. and you're suggesting that this shift is allowing a focus on depth rather than trying to cover all of history. So what are some of the instructional practices that now can be used in, or now are being used in, social studies education to get at that depth and to build students' citizenship competencies?
Yeah, so I'll speak to the ones that Generation Citizens really prioritizing, and our model, we work very closely with our teachers in the classroom. And so we're providing them professional development and coaching in addition to our curriculum to really be able to do this well. It's a big transition for our teachers, as you said, to go from this lecture-centric classroom to now think about how do you actually apply real-world learning. And so that takes a great deal of effort. And so a few things that we focus in our professional development and coaching is around establishing democratic classrooms. And this is really like creating settings where young people are honored and their voices are seen as contributing members to the classroom community. And, schools are really the places where democracy is learned and practiced. And, it's such a unique environment where young people are forced to encounter other young people who they might not otherwise choose to, right? Their beliefs and values might not align. And they're sort of forced to engage in a school setting. And if we're really intentional about how to simulate a democratic style of communicating with one another when we're in these classrooms, we are simultaneously building responsible citizens. And so we focus very closely on establishing democratic classrooms and democratic styles of teaching that center young people as a classroom community and honor their voices within that community. The other thing that's really important here when we think about supporting civic learning is the culture responsive teaching practices of the classroom. Really focused on improving the learning of our most diverse students and those who have been, marginalized academically. And when we actually look at the data of civic learning, we know that these are the students that are also receiving the least access to quality civic learning, which is that project-based real-world experience. Most cases, they're getting civic learning in sort of this like rote historical perspective and not having the opportunities to engage. And so when we're bringing in our culturally responsive teaching practices into the classroom and really inviting our young people to talk about their lived experiences and talk about their communities in the classroom and the ways that they believe they can make a difference in changing those things, you know, we're creating meaning out of their learning. That's very personal to them. And we know that when we do that, we excel their academic success. So those are two key domains that we focus a great deal on when we think about quality civic learning. And then the third one being project-based learning itself, which is a key instructional practice that, you know, takes a lot of energy.
Right. I really appreciate that. And of course, you know, at Courageous RI, we're really helping people understand what practices help support genuine listening, appreciation for diverse points of view, recognizing that we can find common ground even in with views that are outside our lived experience or that that differ from our value system. And so it's so interesting to think about when creating democratic cultures in a classroom, it's basically a set of communication norms and communication practices that are at the heart of that. And I keep thinking about how in so many school environments, there's absolutely nothing democratic about it.
Yeah, it's very adult-centric, right? It's very like, these are the rules, and as opposed to, you know, creating classroom constitutions and ways of operating together. It's right. Very top-down.
And making genuine opportunities for students to have power, you know, in student government that is real, right? And it's just a really intriguing model. So now let's drill down on this cool aspect of what the bill mandates, this project-based learning experience. Can you visualize that for a lot of the people who are listening to the Courageous RI podcast? They might not get exactly what kind of things are students going to do? What are middle school kids going to do? What are high school students going to be able to do? What's an example of a project-based civic action learning experience that might be really transformative for a teenager in Rhode Island middle schools or high schools?
Yeah. So many wonderful examples coming out of Rhode Island. But when I think about this, like project-based learning in civics, we do this so naturally with like our STEM and science courses, right? We automatically think about, oh, they need to take labs and they need to, you know, get these experiences to understand and make meaning of what they're learning in content. But we don't do that enough with civics. We typically just think about knowledge acquisition. But what project-based learning is doing is it's allowing for that civic skill development and also the civic mindsets, right? That young people can start to see themselves as being active participants in their community and understand that their voice does have power and they do have a right and a responsibility to contribute to the communities that they belong to. And so our version of project-based learning, which we call Action Civics, is students go through a process of identifying issues and assets in their community. And they narrow in on one topic that they most deeply care about. And this is when that culture-responsive teaching practices really come into play, because students are bringing their lived experiences around issues that are personal to them. And so we see topics like homelessness, police and community relations, maybe litter on the streets. We also things within the school community, like a lot around school lunch and school lunch being more reflective of the communities that are eating them, and the quality of the school lunch, or wanting more electives in their school because they want some choice over what they're learning. And so the topics vary greatly because this is a really student-led approach. And it's about what they care most about. And from there, they go through a deep research process. But we're not talking about research just in the form of reading about these issues. It's exploratory research. It is about them going out into the community and understanding why these issues exist, what's being done for these issues already? And where can they start to identify the people who are involved with this issue, whether they can influence it or maybe they can change the nature of it? And then they develop a policy goal. And it's different than going up and doing a street cleanup. It's really about being able to develop a policy goal that interacts with government and budgets, which is a big difference, I think, for a lot of people when they think about civic engagement, because we want them to then have the opportunity to take action, to go out into their communities and actually practice these skills. Maybe that's hosting a meeting with an elected official. Maybe that's testifying. Maybe that's getting a petition and trying to realize their policy goal. So there's a wonderful example that I love to talk about out of Central Falls. Their middle school students picked the issue of water quality in their schools. And they tested their water, found some contaminants within the water. They actually held in a meeting with all of the administrators and school departments with the bubbler systems within the school. And they filled up Poland Spring water bottles and they placed them around the room to really showcase what it was that was coming out of these fountains. And they were directly asking, the policy change that they were seeking was a change in the budget so that they could install those wonderful water filtration systems. And it was not until 2 years later, after this class had moved on, this eighth grade class had moved on, that the school then installed these water systems. But it really showcases, one, policy work takes time and persistence, but these young people started a movement that perpetuated beyond just their own one class project and changed the system for all of the students that are coming after them, which is so powerful. And when I walk back into that school, the teacher always, whenever we walked by a water fountain, he's like, they did that. The students did that. And he tells his new students every time, like every year, his new students, those water fountains are there because young people took action because this is something they cared about. And it's very powerful and it gets people very excited. And while that's a beautiful outcome, really civic learning is about the process, right? For them to be able to reflect on what they've learned throughout the way and how they will move forward on other issues in their life that they might care deeply about. But we see successes like that too when they actually realize their policy goal, which is always wonderful.
Wow. Wow. What a great example. And thank you for sharing that. And I really appreciate how you help distinguish this kind of civic learning from community service projects, which I think are a little bit familiar to people, but you really help us understand that the outcomes are really focusing on systemic change, policy change, change that brings students into contact with government and with the democratic process for making change. Now, some people, when hearing this, you know, Christina, they might say, aren't you teaching kids how to be activists? How do you respond to that?
Yeah. You know, civics education is a nonpartisan issue, right? It was really the foundation of our public school systems. If we look back in the history of why our schools were, what some of the original intentions of our public school system, we are teaching young people to engage in a process of communication and understanding the systems that they exist within. And we, you know, it is a student driven issue that they care deeply about. It is not a chosen issue. And what I will say is that there are lots of times where, you know, young people have different stances within the same classroom on how to move forward on issues. And what they're learning to do is to find compromise, to come to a common ground, and to really like have these conversations, because if they're not having them in schools, they're having them somewhere else, right? And so the school systems have an obligation and an opportunity to teach young people how to do that effectively. Because, you know, we can turn on the news and we can see how hard it is for everybody to be able to do that. And so we're just teaching, we're providing young people with the skills to be able to have discourse across disagreement, and to be able to use their critical thinking skills and problem solving skills to, you know, move forward on issues that they care about, you know, well beyond a school setting.
Yeah. What I love about this model is it helps to address the sort of spectator sport mentality that people have about citizenship, right? Mm-hmm. That it's something that other people do that they just watch. Yeah. And I feel like that's been very corrosive over the last 20 or 30 years, right?
Absolutely.
That's been very not good for our democracy. And this seems just like what the doctor ordered to restore and bring to fruition what democratic education is supposed to be about. Now, listen, I understand that stuff is percolating in your world, Christina. What is needed now to help improve civic education in Rhode Island? And what can Rhode Islanders do to help?
Yeah, thank you so much for asking that. You know, it was a huge win for the Civics Literacy Act to pass. And now more than ever, we need to ensure that our school districts and our teachers are equipped to be able to fulfill this mandate. And so we need funding dedicated to civics education. Our teachers are ready to do this work. And our students are eager to have these conversations in their classroom. And what's sort of holding us back right now is that teachers don't have the curricular resources that they need, and they don't have the professional development and skill to acquire new skills to be able to do this really well. So we did a study on the state of civics education in Rhode Island not that long ago. And over like half of our districts right now have not even started to talk about how they're going to fill this mandate because it is an unfunded mandate. And so it is more a matter of being able to equip our schools to be able to live this out, to be able to either create or purchase high quality curriculum resources that are going to be culturally responsive in nature, to be able to get their teachers ready to do this work by offering them key professional development. And then we need our Department of Education to be ready to support this. So they need more infrastructure and oversight to be thinking about evaluations when it comes to civic learning and how we're going to assess how our communities are doing. Because what we risk if we don't provide funding that is equitable is we continue to live in this sort of civic engagement gap where our highest need communities, our lowest income, diverse communities are the ones that are going to have the least access to these opportunities. And we're going to continue to see that our democracy, as a result of this, is not going to be transformed and representative of the populations that it's meant to serve. And so there's an obligation, I think, on our legislator to find a way to fund this mandate and to ensure that that funding is equitably distributed so that our communities that need it most can do this work, as well as our communities that have more access to resources. And so we are pushing for a bill of $1 million to support this work in the next year. And so I urge anyone who's interested in this to join the movement. We're going to need everyone's voices to be involved so that we can ensure our young people get what they deserve.
It seems like a very small investment for such a big potential outcome. From my point of view, this represents a absolutely essential form of education reform for making sure that students develop the citizenship skills they need to make a difference in the world. So, Christina, we're going to put the show notes. We're going to put some down below this. We'll put some details for where people can go and what they can do. Make your voice heard as you contribute to improving the quality of civic education in Rhode Island. And Christina, thank you so much for joining us on Courageous RI. We've really learned a lot from you today and so inspired by your work. You're a courageous educator indeed. So thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, Renee.